administration of the system are on the order of $700 billion. That's not only getting rid of the profits, but also just making the paperwork an order of magnitude simpler.
That's the problem. It would just be too simple and direct. It makes too much sense. Never work.
That's the problem. Makes too much sense. I hear you.
That was retired UC San Francisco professor James Kahn speaking with KABU contributor David Rosenberg. For KABU News in Depth, I'm Reed Johnson.
Help me now, babe. Please. You gotta help me.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
This month, besides being the season of Thanksgiving, here at KABU we celebrate Native American heritage. Tune in throughout the rest of the month for special programming hosted and produced by Native American creators, as well as programming highlighting Native American, First Nation, Indigenous, and Aboriginal cultures here on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
This episode of Labor Radio was recorded on Friday, November 24th.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic today is Portland Teachers on Strike. Our guests this evening are Emily Goldenfields, a sixth grade language arts teacher at Beaumont Middle School, and Ron Morgan, a third grade teacher and chess coach at Marysville Elementary School. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Before we get into your struggle for a union contract, tell our listeners about yourselves. How long have you been a teacher? Why did you become a teacher? And why did you get active in your union?
So this is Emily Goldenfields. Thanks so much for having us here. I taught in the ESL realm, and English as a foreign language, for many years, and I mostly taught adults. In about 2015, I got my teaching license to teach children, K through 12, and I've been in the PPS district since 2016, and I am a member, a director at large of the executive board of the Portland Association of Teachers, and serve on several other committees in our union.
And this is Ron Morgan. I've been working with the youth in some sort of educational and teaching capacity since 1999, when I moved here from the Cincinnati area. I eventually made it with a master's degree around 2008-ish, and started subbing in PPS for 5 or so years. Was in South America for a little bit when I came back. Oh, no, actually, I was subbing when I came back from South America, and then got into the classroom around 2013. And for the last 10 years, I was teaching at Lent Elementary, and then with the change that the district had implemented, I moved over to Marysville, where I'm teaching third grade. I've been the chess coach the entire time. I've had a classroom in Portland Public Schools, and got started with the union right away as well. Started off as a building rep, And then the last couple of years, Lent, I was an external rep where I was connecting with the community, being that I rent and live here in the Lentz community. I knew a lot of businesses and family members, seeing them at the farmer's market and out and about at different bakeries and coffee shops. And then moving over to Marysville, I kind of stayed in that role because a lot of the Lentz community were being pushed over to Marysville as well. And this year I'm part of the PAT CAT team, which is the contract action team.
All right. So you're both members of the Portland Association of Teachers, the 4,500 member union representing certified teachers at Portland Public Schools. You've been on strike now since November 1st, almost a month, and not only the first ever strike for the Portland Association of Teachers, but one of the longest teacher strikes in Oregon history. I've been on the picket lines at schools all over the city and at the daily rallies and marches, and I have to say that this is the most visible, widely and deeply felt working class struggle that I've seen here in my 50 years in Portland's labor movement. The mobilizations of teachers, parents, students, and community members in scores of schools and in the streets of every neighborhood have been energetic, militant, diverse, joyful, creative. Now, tell our listeners what these almost 4 weeks have been like for you, for your coworkers, parents, students, and community allies.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. And I realized some of the question from before about you know, how we got involved in the union and why we became teachers. And I think for me, as a background, my political reawakening after, you know, I was very political when I was young and idealistic in college. And then for me, it was the Bernie Sanders campaign and the Democratic Socialists of America that reignited my interest in fighting for, I want to say radical change, but it really isn't. It's reasonable changes that end the systems of control that have been absolutely hoarding our power and capital in our city, our state, our country, and worldwide. And labor unions are the source of where that power and that leverage happens. So it was a no-brainer for me. Teaching is a passion, and so is being part of a union and being active in the union. But part of the what we needed to fight within kind of the modern day union movement is really focusing on our rank and file power, our democratic core membership, being militant, being powerful, and not being afraid to use the strike as a source of that power. So going and doing such a radical act of going on strike and watching the support of our communities and parents and students behind us and so powerful with us has been this amazing kind of eye-opening, transformative experience, because we see that all these other avenues that both as unions and as voters and as community members and as parents and as educators that we've been trying to use for decades and decades has given us underfunded schools. We are not getting the resources that we need through asking the legislature and voting for legislators and lobbying our legislators and pleading with our legislators and trying to get this in any other way than just actually going on strike has proved futile. And so what we're seeing is the entire community and our own educators waking up to the reality of how we win these fights. It takes us 10 and a half months plus 2 weeks on strike for our district to even start to discuss overload and class sizes. 2 weeks on a strike before they even discuss it for 1 hour. So we are up against using our raw power on the line and our power of community. And I think that transformation of people actually seeing where our movement actually gets the goods has been an amazing experience, something amazing to see.
Yes, thank you, Jamie. Yes, I agree with Emily. It has been a long time in the making. It's been quite a powerful and amazing experience. You know, again, similar to Emily, you know, I never really thought that I'd be a teacher, and I kind of came into working with the youth through more of an activist lens. And I feel like teaching kind of found me, and I'm very grateful for that, because I can't really imagine anything else. I mean, the whole teacher Ron persona is part of my identity. And, you know, being in touch with the community and remembering that public schools are for the community, and to really make sure that I'm connected with the community, hearing what's best for them in each different sections of town, and really trying to push that forward. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I had some experience with that, you know, at Lent and throughout my teaching career. And then specifically over this last month and some change, you know, I've been spending, you know, a lot of hours most days out in the community talking to businesses and people I just pass on the street and giving them flyers and talking to them about what we're doing. And the support is amazing, as Emily also mentioned. It's overwhelming how many businesses and shops and people in general are just supportive of what teachers are doing. And, you know, to also mention that we had, I believe it was 92% of our membership of PAT that voted whether to strike or not. And 99% of the 92% that voted that yes, we were going to strike and ready to strike. And that is obviously a very high number. So we have been committed, we've been strong, and we're in this to win proper education for the community of Portland.
As you mentioned, this strike has been a year in the making, if not more. And PAT has been bargaining for almost a year. So tell me about that process. How had PAT been preparing its members and parents, students, and the community for this strike?
So I think that there's been, we've had new leadership in the union, PAT, that's really embraced a rank and file and militant approach to these issues, because again, I think the context of decades and decades and decades of disinvestment, people really are at a crisis point. Educators are at a crisis point. They cannot teach anymore, with safety issues, with class workload issues, with student behavior and dysregulation from COVID. Our communities, same thing. Our parents and students, everyone knows that there has to be radical change. And I think that our rank and file organizing and building up our communities and building up our connection and trust with our communities and with each other at our building sites, just building our one really strong 1-10 structures within our union, and then having very strategic plans of how we then network with our supporters and network with our PTAs and network with our families, so that we are all united. And as Ron was saying, it is rock solid, our support. I mean, we have members showing up. We have more members showing up week after week. Our picket lines are stronger. Our community support at picket lines. We have 600 community members signing into our picket lines every morning. We have rallies every afternoon, with really holding steady between 3,100 and 3,700. So we are just, we came in so strong by building up our internal supports that are solid, and then really messaging to our communities that we're not going to sit around and wait for things to change, because we've been doing that for 30 years, and it's time now together that we are going to fight for it. And that's what we are seeing, is the fight of our lives, frankly, to win just really reasonable supports.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just to add on a little bit, I feel that, you know, our membership, again, is just, has been needing this, and is without doubt be behind what it is we're doing. I mean, teachers I've worked with who, for lack of a better description, may have been more, you know, moderate in some ways with this, have been willing and wanting to strike and been talking about it, or you know, talking about striking if needed, if the changes weren't being made in our classrooms, as Emily was bringing up. So it's across the board, you know, and I think the leadership that we have at this time has been perfect for this transition of where we're at right now and where we're going. You know, I mean, in the build up to this as well, there's been numerous times I've heard President Bonilla and Vice President Dixon talking to the school board at meetings. I've heard different rank and file members of teachers talking to the school board, different unions talking to the school board about what's happening in schools, community members. And they're all very powerful, and it's all on record. It's unfortunate because sometimes I feel with the school board setup that you have the teachers in the community, you know, the experts of what's going on in our schools speaking, and then they, you know, move into like district management. And then by the time the school board starts discussing things, it seems like more like it's a conversation between management and the school board. And all the testimony that happened earlier in the meeting between, you know, that was given by union leaders, union membership, community members, is all kind of forgotten then, which is unfortunate because we're the ones that are actually in the schools every day, obviously. Some of the other interesting things that were happening in this buildup, you know, we're going, you know, to different organizational events to kind of prepare if we did have to pull the trigger and call a strike to make sure that we were prepared. And an art build, which was beautiful, where so many community members came out and there were people playing records and, you know, and snacks and just a joyous time for something that isn't necessarily joyous, right? But just again, seeing the community coming and supporting us, seeing the leadership and just all the steps of building that momentum so that we felt cared for, we felt strong, and we felt organized. And again, you know, we're in this and we will be in this until we win what's right for our youth and community.
So I'm looking at a flyer from PHE called 2023 Bargaining Platform, Building Safe, Sustainable, and Equitable Schools for Every Student. It has 10 points in the platform. It has demands not only for wages, hours, and working conditions, but for great public schools for all, for the common good. So students, families, and educators deserve smaller class sizes and caseloads, safe and healthy schools, racial equity and restorative justice, competitive salaries and benefits, expanded early learning and preschool, more teaching, less testing, additional special ed education services, expanded mental health services, housing assistance for at-risk families, and real community connections. So tell our listeners about which of these points have emerged as major sticking point and issues most deeply and widely felt by you and other educators.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important that we're talking about how we are in here bargaining for the common good, because we really look at a society that has so disinvested from communities, that has such hoarded wealth, and there really aren't that many avenues where we can start fighting for a redistribution of wealth. Schools are a really excellent place for us to start fighting over that, rather than just a defensive fight where we're trying to just hold strong and not let them keep stripping away our resources. We're actually reclaiming our schools as a place for where democracy is built, our place where redistribution, because just the idea of public education is a radical concept. It doesn't necessarily have to exist. And a lot of forces in this country and would like to erase it as a right. So us fighting for the right to public education as a public good, once we start talking about that, is talking about it in those terms, then we have to fight about children and educators as full people. We have to start talking about housing and nutrition. We have to start talking about early education. We have to start talking about what this right is, and that if we're going to basically have schools be our safety net, be our backstop, then we better start funding them and giving all the services that we need for communities to be strong. So some of the sticking points, I mean, what we've seen as PPS, I mean, they consistently are, they are, frankly, they're bargaining in bad faith. They are pulling things that we've already agreed to. One of the sticking points that it seems like some of the school board members have been kind of messaging that they don't support is this idea about these parent committees in schools. And what these parent teacher committees would do is basically give us an enforcement mechanism and start building up the community schools model that we believe in around workload. Because what the district wants us to do is just keep going the way we're going, where we're getting crushed by workload. And our educators need some mechanism that forces a discussion and forces us to not have 40 kids, 35 kids in classrooms where they have nowhere to sit. Teachers cannot support them. We cannot even communicate with them. We cannot help families. So one of the things that's turned out to be a real sticking point, it looks like, is some student safety and us getting mental health supports and this kind of backdrop of what we're fighting for, having communities be part of our educational system. And parents want to be part of it, and it is a very important piece of what we're fighting for and what we want to enhance on for our next contract. But there are forces at play. There's a ruling class mindset that once you start having enforcement mechanisms about workload, it's going to cost money, and we have to demand fully funded schools, both on our strike, both to our legislature. Like, we are not backing down. We are going to fully fund schools. Okay, that's all for now.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with every single part of that. That 10-point platform, I mean, it's all needed. There's not a single one of those points that an educator that I know or a community member that I know would be like, yeah, that one I guess we could do without, or we don't really need it. They're all essential. They're all good sense. They're all needed in a flourishing, you know, community and society. And I think they're all interrelated. So they all, you know, looking at the whole picture, we need all of those so that each of the other points also functions in a stable way. For whatever reason, it seems like district management and possibly the school board, from what I'm hearing, unfortunately, you know, that they don't want those things. And I'm not sure why. I mean, we could talk about that. I mean, obviously, Emily touched on that, and listeners to your program will understand the evils of capitalism and how that's all connected. So that those 10 points are essential, and every single one of them are needed.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. You're listening to Portland Association of Teachers members Emily Goldenfields and Ron Morgan. And this is a KBOO community-supported, listener-sponsored, non-corporate radio. If you like what you hear, please support us. Go to kboo.fm and make a donation now. KBOO is independent, volunteer-powered community radio. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to voices of oppressed and underserved communities. Think about joining KBOO like joining a union. It's a choice. It's an open job. You can benefit from the information, the tools, and inspiration KBOO provides, and you can be a free rider, or you can join your sisters and brothers in solidarity to build a stronger, more effective voice for social change. It's up to you. Join now. Go to kboo.fm/give. Become a monthly sustainer.
Whatever settlement comes out of this strike will require an active membership to enforce and to build for the next round of bargaining. So how has this strike transformed your membership and their relationships with each other and with parents and students and the community?
This strike has been so incredibly transformative. Just watching the connections that educators, coworkers are building on these picket lines is it's frankly beautiful to see. Teachers are a really hard group to mess with because we kind of have every specialty. Like, you want art, you want signs, we've got signs. You want people responding to some of the bargaining team, or not the bargaining team, but some of the district's assessment of finances. Well, we have high school math teachers who can fight against that. We have nutritional specialists who are making pizza on the line in ovens. We have music teachers, so we have a strike band. We have turned into an organization where we're out on the line watching leaders in our buildings turn into leaders in our strike, and realizing, wow, our admin really doesn't, it's not really an added benefit. We could run this whole thing ourselves. And it's a really dangerous thing to have all this time to connect with each other, get to know each other, trust each other, respect each other, cry with each other, build each other back up. It's like we have become a family unit that is so powerful and so strong that we can't be touched. And I have to be clear, we are not crossing the picket line. We've been 4 weeks out, and we have, you know, educators at really big high schools of 100 members, where we have 99 of them every single day. The one is just a scab anyway and doesn't want to be in the union, a right winger or whatever. So no one is losing faith in crossing this line. We are so solid, and we see the same thing with our students and families. We have students who come to the line, make us food every day. They are learning how to be leaders. They are learning what civil disobedience is, what a movement is, what a strike is. And our communities and our students, they are so lockstep with us because, like we said, we are fighting for what our students need, what our families need. We are all in the fight together because we're bargaining for the common good. There is no, oh, teachers, there's no animosity or resentment between our teachers and our community and our students. We're all fighting together. So it is going to be, this is really, you don't win everything in the first contract, but you sure put your foot in the door, and we are on the way to reshaping this district and this state.
Absolutely. I love all of that, and that is definitely some of the I don't know, things that I wasn't necessarily focusing on or wasn't intending to happen, but just the growth of the community and just seeing the leadership of staff members, of teachers, community members, seeing young people on the picket line leading, I mean, being an elementary school teacher, seeing, you know, people in elementary school that are leading chants and being a part of this huge change. And they'll take that with them, you know, for the rest of their lives. I mean, I had one of my students walking with me and said that now she wants to be a teacher, and she wants to tell her class that she was walking on the picket line and leading chants in a strike, you know? All of this is connected. It's connecting all of us, the community, and to continue to build this movement from the ground up. And I like what Emily said, you know, about we're realizing, which, you know, we probably knew if we sat and thought about it, but definitely what it's showing now is that, well, maybe we don't need all those big money positions at the district office. Maybe that's a lot of bloated money that could be best served in the schools and at student-facing positions.
So how can our listeners keep in touch, especially if they want to get involved in solidarity actions?
Definitely follow PAT, the union, Portland Association of Teachers, at PDX Teachers on all the socials. And there are, once you follow, we have votes of no confidence petitions for our superintendent. We have actions and emails and email lists to be part of to find what our community actions that are happening, sharing our things on socials. There's a lot of trolls out there. So having just kind of positivity and sharing our feeds, and we see where the power is. We don't get distracted by the trolls, but still just sharing with people and really telling them, no, don't listen to all that noise. We have the power. We have the community support. We are not wavering.
Yes. Yeah. All of those things. That's what I've been saying to folks out in the streets and, you know, in different establishments, you know, and talk about it, you know, continue to talk about it. Come out and join us. Join us on the picket line. Join us at the rallies. They've all been phenomenal with that camaraderie and just hearing different people's stories and just seeing the leadership of different individuals growing and expanding right in front of us.
Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Emily Goldenfields and Ron Morgan of the Portland Association of Teachers. I'm Jamie Partridge with Laura Wadlin. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To meet a friend of ours who goes by the name of Killer Joe. Picture a so-called hippie or hip cat standing on a corner in a neatly pressed double-breasted form-fitting pinstripe suit, a pair of pointed-toed shoes with bold white stitches around the soles, a black shirt, long white tie, a black pencil mustache, and of course a very wide-brimmed black felt hat. Killer Joe always has a pocket full of loot, but only the kind that jingles. You see, he likes to play the horses. He is most certainly a ladies' man. As a matter of fact, he is always willing to accept cash contributions from them for any cause, namely his own. The most important thing about Killer Joe that you have to know is that he's very much against manual labor. Killer Joe.